Each episode of the Blind Alchemy podcast is designed to be helpful. Expect comedy. Do not expect consistency or sense to be made. I am Podbot. I was inspired by the Lion Goat podcast. Listen to that show. On today's episode, join the Blind Alchemist for an electrifying journey into the timeless legacy of hope, from the ancient myth of Prometheus to hope's vibrant portrayal in modern media. Philosopher John Buxton and social media expert Luke Box assist in unraveling and illuminating a path to a brighter tomorrow. Don't miss out. Stay tuned until the end for a revelation that will ignite your spirit.
Alright, folks.
Hello and welcome to the Blind Alchemy Podcast. I am your host, the Blind Alchemist, and I am coming at you live from the kitchen with this rendition of reality as we know it. We are all one, and there is nothing new under the sun that shines down here upon the island of mind, which is somewhere adrift in the sea of frequency that creates all of reality. You see, we are connected through this energy. Now, I would like to thank you for joining us today.
We're trying something a little different, a little new here at the Blind Alchemy Podcast with our new guest, John Buxton. John, let's just have an open conversation about the topic of hope today.
Topic of hope. Okay. I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about ethics. We had a conversation about that the other day. And
I know we tried to get that on the fly and the recording failed, John. So I didn't think it was time yet to redo that. So I caught up a new topic.
Okay. How are you feeling today, Mr. Blind Alchemist?
I appreciate you being gung-ho about being here, and I appreciate that. How are you doing today, John?
I'm feeling great. Feeling optimistic. It's the weekend here in beautiful Southern California. The breeze is blowing peacefully. The sky is quite blue. It's a balmy 71 degrees with a low 65% humidity. It's feeling great outside today. How's everything in your side of the world?
Well, you know, it's chilly. It's like 53 degrees. And, you know, overcast. There could possibly be rain. There has been for several days. And I just want to remind everybody who is caught in the current rain, whatever that is, actual water falling from the clouds or the metaphorical rain of heavy thoughts, it can't rain all the time, you know? And that's what we're going to discuss today, something hopefully that cheers us up and gets us back on track. See, I've been thinking, now follow the way I think, if you will.
I will try.
We have Pandora and her box.
Yes.
We can look up or insert the story of Pandora and her box.
I've got it here, if you want.
Go ahead. That's why John Buxton is in a very loud environment, and that's very helpful.
So this is the story of Pandora, according to Encyclopedia Britannica and Britannica.com. Pandora in Greek mythology, the first woman, according to Hesiod's Theogony, after Prometheus, a fire god and divine trickster, had stolen fire from the heaven and bestowed it upon mortals, Zeus, the king of the gods, determined to counteract this blessing. He accordingly commissioned Hephaestus, a god of fire and patron of craftsmen, to fashion a woman out of earth upon whom the gods bestowed their choicest gifts. In Hesiod's works and days, Pandora had a jar containing all matter of misery and evil. Zeus sent her to Epimetheus, who forgot the warning of his brother Prometheus, and made Pandora his wife. Afterward, she opened the jar from which the evils flew out over the earth. Hope alone remained inside, the lid having been shut down before hope could escape. In a later story, the jar contained not evils but blessings, which would have been preserved for the human race had they not been lost through the opening of the jar out of curiosity. Pandora's jar became named Pandora's box in the 16th century when the Renaissance humanist Erasmus either mistranslated the Greek or confuse the vessel with the box in the story of Cupid and Psyche.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it originally was blessings that went bad because it was opened, is it?
It was originally evils and hope remained inside the box, but in some later stories it was blessings that escaped the box.
Blessings escape the box.
Yeah.
So hope stays in that box, is what you're saying. It doesn't come out.
Hope was unable to escape because they shut the lid before hope could escape the box.
Mm-hmm. The question is, why was hope in the box? Is hope a good thing or a bad thing? Because it was in a box of evil. And apparently it was at the bottom of a box, meaning it was put in first.
Maybe. If you think of things in the jar as being fixed in the place in which they enter the jar.
Well, these are spirits. I imagine they could probably move around.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe they could swim around inside the box.
So Hope is female?
Yes, Hope is a female in this story. You know, everything's gendered in Greek mythology for whatever reason.
I don't recall ever knowing the whole story. That's why I was curious and having this conversation currently. I'd always assume they were treating Hope like a captive. Hold on, we have a guest joining us currently, right now, live. We're admitting the Big Bad Lunchbox to talk to us about Pandora and Hope.
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Not too much. We're talking about Prometheus and Pandora's Box and Hope. How you doing?
I'm all right. I got a new book kit.
I see that. That looks epic.
Awesome. Very cool.
I also have a lot of guitars now.
All right. Expanded the collection.
I inherited like 5.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Okay.
What did you inherit?
Well, a Squire that I play the most. I have a cigar box.
No kidding.
With the little 4-string things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I've inherited a Washburn Rover, which is like a little travel acoustic guitar.
Yeah, those can be fun.
And then I've got this little thing. It's a Hohner travel guitar. It's a 6-string, and it's also full length, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But then I also got another little travel guitar that's actually the shorter scale. And I found out that it was designed for my favorite guitar player.
Oh, who's that?
Billy F. Gibbons of ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah.
And he had this thing designed to fit in an overhead compartment.
Oh, that's cool.
It is also the guitar that Marty is playing in the opening scene of Back to the Future in front of the huge speaker.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
He plugs in this tiny little guitar, and I mean, that's because he's small, the guitar's small, makes the speaker look that much bigger, you know.
Right. That's cool.
Oh.
This will eventually be the room I stream from. I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
Setting up your studio or whatnot?
Pretty much just for the backdrop.
Well done. You got it working.
It looks good. It looks good.
I just got through sorting through all these video games and putting them back in the right box.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I inherited a massive collection of video games.
Nerd.
I sold about 80 Xbox 360 games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's just 360.
Yeah, that's massive. I don't think I've owned 80 games in my entire life.
Not at one time, anyway.
There's a copy of Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, wow.
So, have y'all talked about how Prometheus was basically a Lucifer? Or was one of them?
No.
We haven't. We were just scratching the surface when you joined. We just were reading a little bit about what the history of the myth was and who the characters were. And we were just asking the question of why Hope was kept in the jar when all the evils were let out of the jar.
I think the question more or less is hope good or evil? Was hope in the box because it was both good and evil? Or did it go in pure and get contaminated?
There's a thing that says here, the word Hesiod uses is elpis, which can mean hope, but is often also translated as meaning expectation. This is from interestingliterature.com. Despite the similar meanings of the two words, they are, after all, not precise synonyms, synonyms, so it may be that expectation rather than hope was the last thing left in the jar. And they also point out that Pandora's jar is very much like a fall of man story for the ancient Greeks, the pagan equivalent to the story of Adam and Eve's expulsion from the Garden of Eden.
So it's an expulsion story?
The release of all the spirits from Pandora's jar could be the equivalent of taking a bite of the tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, y'all were talking about Prometheus, Pandora's box.
Yeah.
What was left in the box?
So, hope or expectation was left in the box, theoretically, and the evils were let out of the box. And you were saying that there is a tie there between Prometheus and Lucifer?
Yeah, Lucifer means, you know, light bringer, light bearer. And Prometheus brought fire. Some say it was fire. Some just say it was knowledge. Brought the light. The knowledge of fire, maybe. I don't know. But he's kind of been identified throughout the ages as one of the Lucifers.
Are there many?
Yeah, because Christ could have been a Lucifer as well.
Does each culture have one, probably?
No, some people would have multiple. They're people that brought knowledge to man. There's lots of figures that fit the criteria, you know, or that fit the moniker of light bearer, light bringer. Prometheus is just one of them.
I think Prometheus is interesting because he is a craftsperson in some ways, and he uses the fire that he brings to make these material things, which I think is interesting. But he's also tied up in this idea of the origin of man, or the origin or rebirth. There's this weird sort of cycle of Prometheus, it seems. I don't know if that's just like a modern interpretation of that Greek myth, or if that was part of the Greek myth of Prometheus, but there's that origin of craftsmanship or origin of man, not just the origin of knowledge, the origin of practical skill, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right. The ability to work with stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's why we say it could be the use of fire.
Uh-huh.
That he brought. That's something that you use in metalworking. It's not just fire, but how to manipulate fire.
Right. And things that you stick in the fire.
Right. Not just that. I mean, like adding air.
Uh-huh.
When you add air, you greatly intensify the heat. If you just stick a hot iron in wooden coals, it'll take forever to get hot.
Right.
But if you add just a little bit of air to it, then it increases that, you know, threefold, fourfold.
Right.
Heat it up real quick, and then it makes it easier to work.
It's, you always have a big bellows in your blacksmith shop.
I actually had a little forge that I built.
Oh, did you?
Out of a brake drum.
Oh, yeah.
I used a hairdryer to add air, and it works really, really well.
What all did you make with your forge?
Oh, I just wanted to build one just to say that I did, and I hammered out a few little things out of rebar. Just to learn how to work it. I learned how to make little curly cues and how to make it smooth and square. And I reshaped a couple of lawnmower blades into like really big knives.
Okay.
I have a friend who has a little forge, I guess. It's like he ordered it from somewhere and he melts down brass and copper and stuff. And he makes little ingots. And
that's not a forge.
It starts with a C.
Crucible.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. I don't know if you remember us doing that in the backyard. We were like seeing at what temperature certain coins melted.
Yeah.
We would make stacks of copper and see how long it took to melt. And it was pretty neat.
Well, we did a lot of dumb shit out there.
Yeah, mine was really easy to make. It was, like I said, it was a brake drum. It's actually a big brake drum because it's off a dump truck, but it was used and free. I just cut like a little window on one side of it and then a big slot to match the window on the opposite. I could lay a piece of bar in there and I had a window on the other side where I could stick it out if I needed to get to the middle of the bar. Put a little pipe under it that had kind of a trap device for the ash, and then it piped out to the hairdryer.
Huh.
The hairdryer would just blow air up from the bottom of it. We took a license plate and punched holes in it for like an ash trap on top, or a coal trap to keep the coal from falling down in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it worked great. It worked awesome.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
So was it just open at the top? Or did you...
Yeah, it's just open.
Okay.
Yeah, when you're moving that much air, you don't really need to seal it up. It gets hot all by itself.
Right.
A lot of people, they're using gas to do it, and so then you want a top on it. It makes it more efficient. You're not using as much gas, but I'm using wood I literally found in the yard, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that was my next question. What was your fuel source? Were you using coal or...
Scrap wood. Also, I worked in construction, so there was plenty of 2x4s and little end pieces from rafters and stuff to throw in there. Mm-hmm. It was just scrap wood, so the fuel was free.
I've never worked with a forge or anything, but I'd found this little camp stove that you can take when you go camping, but it's a gasifier stove such that you put in wood in the top. It's just a little vessel. I just made it out of cans, but I have to be careful with it because it'll actually get so hot, it'll melt the can if you're not careful, because it uses the draw of an outer can and there's an inner can, and I have a section that goes on the bottom that provides like an air draw. And so it uses the draw up between the cans to create this path of the air so that the flames just get hotter and hotter and hotter as it burns, and then it actually will burn the wood gas once all the wood burns down. But you have to sort of feed it constantly to get it hot. But it'll get hot after about 30 minutes. It gets really hot.
That is a primitive afterburner.
Turbo chimney.
Exactly.
Turbo chimney.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's pretty neat. Once you get it hot, it'll boil water in like, I don't know, like 6 minutes or something. It works almost as fast as one of those jet boils.
I have some gnomes for the next time we do the Gnostic thing.
Oh, do you? Yeah, hold on.
So this is a little baseball gnome. I got it at a baseball game.
That's great.
And then I got this little dude too.
That one's neat. What's that one?
It's kind of dark and hard to see. He's just like he's got a green robe and a red hat on.
He's got an interesting look on his face. He looks wizened but joyful.
He looks amused.
Yes, amused.
Yeah, looks like he's about to do something mischievous.
Either that or he's watching somebody else do something mischievous.
I like that he has very subtle coloration. He's not like a extremely bright and colorful gnome. He's like a earthen colored gnome.
Yeah, he's definitely basic gnome. Green shirt, red hat.
Looks like traditional craftsmanship versus, you know, some sort of new concrete.
He's an old school gnome.
Right. It's an old school gnome.
Yeah,
he might even be a brownie.
Yeah, he could be with that coloration. Are both of those carved out of wood?
No, the old one is plaster, it feels like. Uh-huh. And the other one is whatever resin that they use for the cheap little ballpark figurines. His cap is actually broke off. At some point in time, he fell off a shelf and broke his cap. But JG was the Jackson Generals. It was a local baseball team.
Right.
I got a picture of somewhere of me with a gnome with the guy dressed up like that at the ballpark.
I think I've been to one of those games.
So was the mascot, the general, a gnome? Was he a general of gnomes? The gnome army general or something?
A gnome general?
Not really. I don't know why he was the mascot for a little while, but it really wasn't. He was the guy at the ball games running around the stands.
Uh-huh.
They had little figurines made of it, but I don't know. It never was really the official mascot.
I see.
I think now our mascot's like a billy goat or something.
Interesting.
The gnomes got canceled because they're apparently offensive.
No, they're too woke.
Gnomes are too woke.
We can't have diversity and inclusivity anymore. We need nothing but straight white mascots.
Straight white capri.
Full humans.
Only goats. Only pants.
I have a kid that is going to UT right now.
Uh-huh.
And that is their niche of education, Greek classic.
Oh, yeah.
The story about Prometheus would be included in that.
Well, maybe we should be talking to them and not you.
Can we get them on the line?
Ted, get them on the phone. Get them on the phone. Send them a link.
That's my trans kid, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. You knew them as...
Yes.
Now... And actually making leaps and bounds in that field.
That's great.
Really?
Invited to speak at conferences, interning as a curator at their library/museum. You know, when somebody calls and says, hey, I need manuscript so-and-so, they're one of the people that go and get it and photograph it and send it to them.
Cool.
Yeah, the other day they sent me a picture of like some 800-year-old Latin book.
Wow.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
That you get to handle that stuff, study it. They're also in this unique position where everybody there that studies classics studies Latin, except for them. They do Greek.
Yeah.
Are they trying to revive Latin?
No, just Latin is the... When you're in a conservative state, it's almost always going to be religiously directed, and Latin was the language of a lot of the religious texts. So that tends to be a focus of study. Plus, so much of it was Latin. You know, they spread a lot further than Greek did. So... the availability of text is a lot greater.
Mm-hmm.
My kid is just more interested in Homer and the Iliad.
Is reading some of those texts in Greek?
Oh, absolutely. Like having to translate certain manuscripts and texts. Yeah, it's pretty neat.
That's cool. Wow.
They specialize in the Koine Greek.
Koine?
What is Koine Greek?
There's certain time periods... The grammar and the usage was a little different.
Dialect.
If we were to go back and read something that was written, even though it was written in English, like just reading the King James Version Bible, that language, it's difficult for a lot of people to read because it's, it doesn't quite translate into the same English that we're used to.
Right. Like reading Beowulf or something.
Right. Same thing happens in Greek. There's different time periods in Greek when there's like Hermetic and then Koine and more modern. So... it changes a little bit. I mean, most of the letters stay the same, but the word that they use for will have different colloquial terms or different meanings, connotations.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that you could access 800-year-old books at the library and might have to take a road trip.
Well, you can't. You can't.
See, this goes back to Cynical Sam and the library man. You can't just walk in and look at old books. They won't let you. It's rude.
No, but if you ask for the information, they will be happy to transmit it to you.
Yeah, and see, now you have an in because you can be like...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm s***ing. I need to hook me up. Let's check out some Greek.
You probably don't remember there. You know, you were like 10... 12.
There's these little red boxes that all the books are in, and they're all custom made for the book. You know, it's like the exact size that it needs to be. And I told them that's the job I want. I want to make the boxes.
I want to make the boxes.
That'd be cool.
That'd be a good gig.
Yeah. I just, that way I'd at least get to see it, you know. I got to see it to measure it.
Put on your white gloves.
You don't. You don't.
Because the gloves have acid in them or something?
No, the fibers of the glove are more likely to tear the page than you are to transmit anything to the page.
Oh.
So whenever you see people handling old books nowadays, none of them will be wearing gloves. The gloves could actually damage the pages more than your fingers.
Wow. That's good to know.
That is...
I always thought that was interesting, the glove approach.
With some items of antiquity, yeah, metals and whatnot. But when you're talking about paper, the fibers are stronger than the paper.
Yeah.
The wrong move could rip the page.
That makes sense.
Just because the fiber caught, you know, a little nick in the page or something.
I always thought you wouldn't be able to have as good tactile dexterity as well. Like, you wouldn't know how lightly you're touching the page if you have the gloves on. Like, when you wear gloves, it's hard to work with stuff.
For that very reason, I don't wear gloves. I've done construction almost my whole life, never wore gloves. I can't handle stuff
right.
The way I feel comfortable handling it with the gloves on. Yeah.
Do they use anything to turn the pages or just their hands? No, like tweezers or some kind of?
They do have tweezers, and it depends on the book.
Yeah.
A lot of the older books are on vellum, which is like a lot more durable than modern paper.
Mm-hmm.
Is it animal hide?
Yes, usually it's a sheepskin.
Mm-hmm.
but some of the stuff that was printed like in the late 1700s, early 1800s, it is a lot more delicate. So they do use a rubber-tipped tweezer to flip some pages.
Wow, that was some hardcore bookmaking back in the day, making books out of vellum.
Yeah.
One thing I don't have in my collection out of all these books, and I can probably have it done, but have you ever seen a four-edge painting on a book?
No.
So they would have this little painting that when you flex the book like that, it would show up.
Oh, yes. I think I've seen something like that before.
You'll see them, they'll kind of flex the book and then put it in a clamp and then paint it. And then when you take it out of the clamp, the painting disappears.
Right. Oh, cool. Right.
Right. And you have to kind of flick it to make it show up again. I'll have one someday.
Hey, Hunter S. Thompson. Gonzo. That's cool. Have you read that? It's Ancient Gonzo Wisdom, Interviews with Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, okay. I bet that'd be good. I love Hunter S. Thompson. I love his writing.
Somewhere I have copies of Fear and Loathing in America, part 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've read that. I've read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and Fear and Loathing on the election trail. I don't remember what election it was.
Were those letters too?
I'm not sure if they were. I don't think so.
Fear and Loathing is just letters that he wrote to Congress people.
And I've read The Rum Diaries and Hell's Angels. It's a very, very good book if you haven't read Hell's Angels.
I need to. I heard he had a little scuff up with them.
I wonder how much of it was staged, honestly.
My stepson wants me to teach him a song on guitar.
Ah, cool.
Oh, okay.
What song are you going
to
learn?
I think he wants to learn Rock Me Mama. Is that the name of the song?
The Wagon Wheel? Rock Me Mama Like a Wagon Wheel?
Yeah.
Please do not teach him the Darius Rucker version of that song.
Oh.
Teach him the Old Crow and Medicine Show version because it is by far the best.
You know, probably, yeah. We had a discussion at work the other day about some cover songs that were actually better than the originals. There's a girl, her name is Kay Flay. She did this song called Blood in the Cut a while back that kind of got some commercial popularity. But she's done a couple of covers lately of songs that I didn't really like. And I like her versions of them.
Yeah.
One of them's Brain Stew by Green Day. I just don't really like Green Day. I've never cared for them. The way she does it, it's really neat. It's really cool. I think she also does Break Stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I never was really a big Limp Bizkit fan, but...
Yeah, they had 3 or 4 really awesome songs, and Break Stuff is one of them, definitely.
Well, I think there was a change, that generational change in music right then.
Mm-hmm.
When Linkin Park and nu metal, I think, is what they wound up calling it. And I just didn't really catch on with a lot of the bands. I just didn't like them.
All right. I liked Linkin Park's first album.
I'm not sure where Deftones falls in there. I really like Deftones. They're awesome. But the rest of the stuff, Korn, was kind of
eh. Yeah. What about you, John?
My only reaction is ooh, wah, ah, ah, ah. Ooh, wah.
Bane was kind of disturbed. Godsmack, where's that fall? That was a pretty good one.
Godsmack was a different thing. They were almost like a end of grunge era. You know what I mean? Like, they were more grunge than they were new metal, in my opinion.
Right. One of the hills I'll die on is that, what was the name of the grunge band that was Pearl Jam and Soundgarden put together? Temple of the Dog.
Temple of the Dog.
That was like one of the best grunge albums ever.
Yeah, I thought that was a great album. And they were also members of Mother Love Bone in there, but I think some of the members of Mother Love Bone played along with those other two bands.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
Mother Love Bone is kind of recognized as being part of the beginning of that.
Yeah, one of the first. Them and Screaming Trees. Those are things that they evolve over time, so it's impossible to know, really, when grunge started. Every music genre started 10 years before you think it did, you know what I mean?
Yes, every once in a while somebody will come along and say that, like, Testament was the first grunge band, because I think they were from that area.
Yeah, I had a Testament album. I had a Testament cassette. It was pretty good. I can't remember what the name of that album was. I probably still have that cassette somewhere. That might have been one of the ones that got stolen.
A friend of mine buys cars out of the junkyard, and he bought one that had a box of cassettes in it.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
And some of them were even unopened. There was a single. Have you ever seen one of those?
Right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I remember those.
And it's Vanilla Ice. The Ice Ice Baby single, baby. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day that I listened to It's Tricky by Run DMC, and I still know every word of that song.
Oh, yeah.
36 years later, I still know every word of that song.
Yep. And it's not like something you practiced every day since then.
No.
Well, maybe.
I probably know most of the words to most of the Beastie Boys songs.
Yeah. License to Ill, I got you. That was my jam.
I went through a Fat Boys phase myself. I thought the Fat Boys
were Yeah.
Oh, what was the... It's not under the shelf, it's on display. With all the diseases going around today, you need a peace of mind when you do the wild thing, so a condom, baby, don't forget to bring.
Yeah.
Protect yourself. Fat Boys. Crushed
it. Actually, in all truth, I wasn't really super into the Fat Boys. I had a buddy of mine that was super into the Fat
Whatever.
Boys.
Whatever. They had a movie, Disorderlies. It was awesome.
I thought they were fun. You know, I liked that they didn't take themselves seriously. I've always liked musicians that don't take themselves too seriously.
You know, that's why Justin Timberlake is like up there in my book. It's because he doesn't take himself too seriously. Like, he has no problem going on Saturday Night Live and making fun of his own genre.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I don't know.
I have it on vinyl.
Really?
I have some Justin Timberlake vinyl. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think you've lost cool points.
Were you like an NSYNC fan?
Oh, no. Like, I didn't care anything about it until I saw him on Saturday Night Live.
He does ruin a lot of jokes.
And, like, once I saw him doing all the stuff with Andy Samberg, Dick in the Box.
He's like, what?
So, like, I was just like, okay.
Yeah, the Lonely Island stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You've weaseled your way into my rotation.
Were you a big fan of that End Time movie that he did?
Oh, what was that?
Time was the currency in this reality. And so basically you worked to get more time. The end of the day, you had earned minutes on your life if you did your work for the day, or was sort of like the world. Yeah, it was this kind of grim, harsh reality.
This was Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, I think it's called End Time. I believe that's the name of the...
No, man.
You can't hide 100 years in the ghetto.
No, that's not a real thing.
It's not a good thing.
Is this a Mandela effect?
It's a real thing, but it's not a good thing.
Oh.
Are you sure it's not a Mandela effect?
Wasn't he an alpha dog? I think I remember that movie.
Be careful, Johnny. I'm not one of your little friends.
Yeah, I think he was in that with a skater, Paul Rodriguez.
Wow, I had no idea he had ever done a movie.
Oh, yeah, he's been in a few.
Yeah.
The End Time, it's got Cillian Murphy.
Well, Cillian Murphy, that'll be up on the Oscar list then.
Amanda Seyfried. Seyfried, whatever her name. Seyfried, whatever her name.
Stop. I'm like, it's Seyfried. She's like, it's Seyfried. And I was like, no one says Seyfried, it's Seyfried. And everybody pronounces it correctly here.
No, you're making stuff up.
You know, the chick from Seventh Heaven?
From what?
Seventh Heaven. She was a teenage girl in Seventh Heaven. That was like her.
Okay. Didn't watch that either.
She's got the giant eyeballs that make her look like an anime creature.
And manipulating people, and it's really fun.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. It doesn't ring a bell.
You don't know who Amanda Seyfried is?
No.
Well, I do. She's got the weird eyes. Weird eyes that are way too big.
They're cool looking. They're very interesting.
No, you're making up.
She's incredibly attractive, but she does kind of look like a whale or some sort of cetaceous creature.
I can't find this movie anywhere.
Here, I'll share my screen and play the trailer.
In Time, there it is. I found a future where people stop aging at 25, but are engineered to live only one more year. Having the means to buy your way out of the situation is a shot at immortal youth. Here, Will Salas finds himself accused of murder and on the run with a hostage, a connection that becomes an important part of the way against the system.
So it's kind of Logan's Run then.
Okay. I can see that.
Are all of these screenshots enough proof for you, Mr. Alchemist?
No. You're beautiful. Let's have sex.
No.
Then why are you wasting my time? Why did you put yourself on the circuit?
No.
Let's see, In Time was 2011.
Yeah. It was...
You better pull up the Internet Movie Database before I'm going to believe you on that, man.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. That's what I read from.
These things can be fake. Oh, you read? Okay, so, all right, it's a real thing, apparently.
IMDb is an app on my phone. I use it.
Regularly, yeah.
I do. I use it probably 5 times a day.
What movie was this?
Yeah. Well, it's usually I want to know what movie people had together. You know, the whole 6 degrees of separation thing. But I'm like, wasn't so-and-so in that movie? And then I look that up. And
Kevin Bacon was in that.
Bacon. Well, what we found out was that my wife and I are cousins. So there you go.
Damn.
A lot of times we want to know what movie came first.
Mm-hmm.
The other day I saw an ad for the old Romeo and Juliet movie that had John Leguizamo and...
Leonardo DiCaprio, and
it listed Leonardo DiCaprio. It listed, I want to say Claire Danes or whoever the female was in that.
It's Claire Danes.
That sounds about right.
Then it listed Brian Dennehy instead of, I was like, why did they list Brian Dennehy instead of John Leguizamo? Which led into a conversation about how John Leguizamo was probably a bigger star than Leonardo was at the time that that show came out.
Yeah, and he's kind of always been underrated in his career, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I go back and look at everything that John Leguizamo did before Romeo and Juliet came out. Like, he was in Carlito's Way.
Yep.
To Wong Fu.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he had done, like, some big movies when that came along. Yeah. Leonardo was relatively unheard of, you know?
Yeah.
Not to mention, he was a stand-up comedian for probably 15 years before he was ever in movies.
Mm-hmm. Some of his stand-up is really good, yeah.
Oh, one-man show is a...
He's an interesting character.
I'll go with you on that. He is definitely underrated. He's one of the few actors, if I see him on the list, then I just watch the movie. I don't care what the movie's about. John Leguizamo's in it. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
I go through those phases, and recently I've been disappointed. Have you seen any of the last few movies that Bruce Willis made?
No.
No, I've refused to watch them. Once he did, I think it was that... Red, the Red series, the second movie of the Red series, that was it for me with Bruce Willis. I was like, nope, he's over with, he's done. Poor Bruce. He went down the Nick Cage route, you know, he just...
If there's one more Bruce Willis movie that you watch, make it Once Upon a Time in Venice.
And it's good! The fans leap to their feet, grown men cry, women throw underwear, and he silently promises himself... his mother and his God, that no matter how big he becomes, he's never, ever going to change.
Okay.
It's a really funny flick. It's like back to those old funny slapstick, whole nine yards kind of movies.
Yeah.
That you enjoyed watching.
What do you think about Hudson Hawk?
I thought Hudson Hawk was good.
Dude, I loved that movie. It bombed so badly, but it was so great. So great.
Was that the one where they would sing certain songs?
Yeah.
Because the timing was exactly what they needed for whatever they were robbing or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was great.
3 minutes to save the girl, 3 minutes to save the world.
That was great.
That's a great movie.
I got
guess we see who wears the penis in his family, huh?
But no, I watched a bunch of them, and it just looks like you can almost tell that they're writing the movies around the fact that he can't remember shit.
Yeah.
You know, like he'll have very few lines. One of them I watched, like, was it him or might have been a John Travolta. I've been watching some John Travolta movies lately too, some recent ones, and they're both like equally horrible. They're just like absolute crap these days.
Yeah, I gave up on John Travolta after he did that.
Battlefield Earth.
Who is responsible for allowing this man animal to run around unsupervised?
Yeah, Battlefield Earth was pretty much the end for me, but I was never a huge Travolta fan, I'll be honest with you, but I thought he was good in some stuff that he's done. He was pretty good in Phenomenon. He was pretty good in Pulp Fiction, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I guess Flashdance or whatever.
Flashdance?
Yeah, I just said that to be funny because he did the...
Oh, okay. I don't know what that is.
Maybe.
I don't know what that is.
Hold on, I have the record.
Staying Alive with the Bee Gees.
Oh, Staying Alive.
Staying Alive.
That song is awesome.
He was in Welcome Back, Kotter.
I think he was a great... He was from that old age of performers. He's like a Cary Grant kind of guy. He's a singer, a dancer, an actor. He could do it all, you know, but as far as acting goes, he's pretty hit or miss for me. I think it has a lot to do with his direction and editing. There you go. Saturday Night Fever. That's what I was talking about.
That was the name of the movie.
So does John Travolta give you hope?
No, absolutely not.
What gives you hope, Lunchbox?
For movies, or?
So that was kind of like our touch topic of the podcast today.
Since we have blown.
Okay, so there's this artist, this kid named Ren. He is a phenomenal musician, plays pretty much anything with strings on it. He has a way with vocabulary that I appreciate, and he blends a lot of styles together. He is a fairly competent guitar player, but at the same time, he'll rap. And it's not just the 1 meter white boy rap. He can go through all the styles. Plus, he's also one of those anti-capitalist people, and that really strikes a chord with me.
Is this Ren Gill, the Welsh songwriter, musician, rapper, producer, and director?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I didn't know his last name was Gill. Maybe I did. But he just goes by Ren.
Uh-huh.
He's Welsh. There's just something about his vision that translates really well. And for somebody to, he's young, he's like just now 30, 31, something like that. Plus I've watched him blow up.
Yeah.
You know, like when I started listening to him, there wasn't like a whole lot of followers on YouTube. He's in the millions and making a name for himself. So it's kind of neat to watch the success stories happen. That gives me.
What's your favorite song of his?
Money Game Part 2. Yeah, that's pretty easy. It has a really cool little breakdown in it where he tells you, I'm going to break it down for you motherfuckers line by line. This is business economics in a nursery rhyme.
Oh, yeah. Let's play it and react to it.
All right. Do it.
I don't know if we can get away with playing it.
Well, we can edit this out of the podcast if need be. But yeah, might as well.
I promise you, he won't care. That's part of how he became big was there's a whole channel of just people reacting to his stuff.
Yeah.
He sent his music to people on YouTube to react to. That's part of how he got big.
Oh, yeah.
Because all these people were like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. How do I not know this guy?
Only joking, only messing. Don't be stressing. I'm a peaceful adolescent. There's no need to be unpleasant. Rhyme my thesis in a rhyme scheme to analyze the brain. Will you sit back and watch the show? America.
Be sure to tune into the next episode to hear the rest.
Thank you very much for being here with us. I'm your host, your guest on the quest as we float through the sea of frequency that we call reality. Love you, ladies and gentlemen. Please hit us up on every social platform you can find. Be safe out there. Come back and talk to me, all right?
We would love to receive your feedback and your questions for advice. Please email us or send us a voicemail. Our address is theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com. Find, like, review, subscribe, and contact us on Facebook and YouTube at The Blind Alchemy Podcast, all one word. Please subscribe to this podcast on your podcast player. We are available on Spotify, SoundCloud, and anchor.fm/theblindalchemypodcast. Please tell all your friends, enemies, and any strangers to listen to our podcast. This will help us bring joy to everyone. Text-to-speech services were provided by freetts.com and readloud.net. Various audio clip content, used for the purposes of satire, were located on youtube.com. Thanks to all the musicians, composers, engineers, vocalists, and content creators. Please see the episode notes for full attribution. We would like to extend a special thank you to the world's greatest musicians, sound designers, and engineers at Hairline Productions for their help with the composition, performance, editing, production, and recording of both the original music and today's show. Please like their content on SoundCloud.